Hello and welcome to the C&D podcast. I'm Jo Shorthouse from C&D and you're listening to Series 5 of A Coffee With, a podcast series where we sit down with some of pharmacy's most inspirational women to talk about all facets of women in pharmacy. In each episode, I'll be chatting to a different woman associated with pharmacy about their career, the issues of the day, as well as the industry in general. Over the next 4 weeks, we'll hear plenty of words of wisdom. So pour yourself a cup of your favourite hot beverage and join me for the latest instalment of A Coffee With. In this episode, we're welcoming Anisha Patel, a paediatric specialist, hospital pharmacist and senior clinical lecturer at King's College London. Anisha has formed an unconventional path within the pharmacy profession. Armed with a commitment to create a portfolio career and having a global perspective on healthcare, Anisha's career journey spans international practice, including a role in pharmacy services for the Abu Dhabi Grand Prix. In 2020, Anisha took a bold and unconventional step into entrepreneurship by creating the Pharmacist Diaries podcast. This innovative platform has swiftly become a go-to learning resource for pharmacy careers, featuring diverse pharmacists sharing their unique stories. Anisha's engaging style and insightful conversations have made the podcast not only a valuable resource for aspiring pharmacists, but also a testament to the diverse opportunities within the evolving landscape of pharmacy. Welcome, Anisha, and thank you so much for being here.
Absolutely. I'm happy to be here, and I love coming onto other podcasts. It's exciting for me to be on the other side.
It is. You're being interviewed for once instead. So let's just start off by talking about how you really got started in pharmacy and why you wanted to get started in pharmacy. What made you want to study it to start with?
My story isn't so exciting to start with. My journey into pharmacy was mainly because my dad owned a pharmacy for 25 plus years, a community pharmacy. He's not a pharmacist, though. He was a business owner, had locums working for him, but he understood the flexibility and the variety that the career had to offer me as a female. And he always, you know, put that suggestion out there to me that actually, you know, when you look down the line 10, 15 years from now, you may be married, you may have children. This role allows you the flexibility to go into different sectors, which is exciting, and allows you to explore a career that has opportunity. There is always a need for pharmacists, so you'll always have a job, and it's a professional job, which is really exciting and something that was partly an expectation, but also something that my parents would have liked me to achieve. And then also when you go into motherhood and knowing that I potentially could become a parent, that there is flexibility within the pharmacy career space to allow you to locum or take on contracts as well as permanent roles. So I was quite confused when I was sort of 17, 18, and also, for people who maybe don't know my background, I lived in America for a decade, and this is during my teenage years. So I moved there when I was 15. Yes, so I didn't do GCSEs and I didn't do A-levels. I moved from a private all-girls school here in the UK to a very public mixed school, no uniform, pretty much like Clueless, the movie.
Oh, I was going to say, like the films that you see over here, the teenage films.
That is basically what I transitioned into, which was really hard at the age of 15. And I think the focus of having to transition to a new country and adapt to a new lifestyle kind of took over. And I was trying to focus more on getting through the education because the curriculum is so different. So it just felt like I was having to really push myself to get the grades that I need to then go to a college or a university. By which point I was kind of confused as to what I really wanted to do because I was just focusing on the present moment. So I did an undergraduate degree in biology and chemistry, knowing that those were my skills. And I had a little bit of a thought process that maybe I would become a doctor, specifically a pediatrician, because I really like children. But I was faced with the MCAT exam to get into medical school in the US, and it was so challenging. And I did average, so I knew I wouldn't get into a really good school. So it was a case of, do you take a year out from already having done 4 years of university, take a year out and then try again to get in the following year? Or do I look at other avenues, which is when my dad suggested, hey, like, look at pharmacy. And it was in the summer, so I actually applied to pharmacy schools in the UK, knowing that I could potentially get in for the September start. And the University of Hertfordshire were a brand new cohort of pharmacy school. And I was like, cool, this is amazing. Like, I've got, you know, a professional degree to look forward to. It's really exciting. It's still something medical, which I'm interested in. It allows me all the flexibility and the career choices that I'm looking for. And I get to move back to the UK, which was something that I really wanted to do because I was missing home a lot. So I went all in and kind of, yeah, moved home and started pharmacy.
So how did you start off your actual career then after you finished your degree at Hertford? Where did you go then?
Yes. So I, during university, worked in a community pharmacy all weekends, summer holidays. I was mainly earning pocket money to spend on travel. That was my main objective, was to kind of earn that income to enjoy it, but also utilize the pharmacy sector to grow within my student life. I learned so much about over-the-counter products. I learned so much about consultation skills, communication, business, finance, dispensing. I mean, you name it. There was a skill that you could definitely gain during that experience. And I really enjoyed it. I worked in an independent pharmacy, which was very family-oriented. So customers were pretty much always a return. You got to know individuals, families, their children's, their parents, grandparents. It was such a nice community, and it was really enjoyable to make those connections with people and get to know people really, really well. And I loved it, but I also wanted to see what else pharmacy had to offer, which is after university I decided, like, I do want to try hospital in terms of a career trajectory. Not only do they have all the specialization options to go into and explore, but there's a direct sort of strategy in terms of, like, or a pathway to professional growth. You know that you can go in, do your diploma and, you know, rotational roles, and eventually go down the pathway of specializing as a pharmacist. And that's quite a set pathway, which was nice. I felt like community pharmacy, you either bought your own pharmacy or you became a manager in the pharmacy or a regional manager in the pharmacy, and it was more of a leadership journey. And I wasn't quite interested in the leadership journey at that time. I was more interested in the specialization. So I did a rotation in pediatrics and absolutely loved it. But my problem with my first job as a pharmacist, I did a residency in Oxford, is I loved every rotation. I loved every specialty, and I loved so many different things about it. It was then difficult to choose which area of expertise to go into. But also hospital allows you to do a diploma, which was really exciting because I could continue my education, continue to learn and grow, which was really important to me. I loved the whole multidisciplinary working and having a massive team of people to work with when you feel quite lonely in a community pharmacy at times, especially if you are the only pharmacist at that time, you can feel a little bit secluded. And that wasn't really something that I was interested in having to experience every day. I'm a people person. I know that. And that helped me to understand, actually, I need to have a big team around me. And Oxford has, you know, well over 500 members of staff within the pharmacy team. And also with the residency, I was well aware that if you join a residency, you develop immediate bonds with the other pharmacists who are going on that journey with you. And for me, making those lifelong friendships as well was really important at the start of my career. So absolutely, I was all in on applying for the residencies. But back then I was not as confident as I am today. I struggled to get a pre-reg placement to begin with in hospital. I think I had to go through kind of the second round or clearing, but eventually got a position with Papworth Hospital. And this really, like, you know, it was a struggle on my confidence because I was good in the pharmacy course. I did really well. I got first in my degree. I was, you know, top end of the class, most years, like that I was there, and I knew that I had the skills and the knowledge, but when I came down to getting a job and doing an interview, I really struggled in comparison to my peers. That talking piece was hard for me, and that stopped me from getting experiences that I wanted. But I did get that pre-reg placement, and because it was a small hospital in Cambridge, Papworth, only two pre-regs there, they really nurtured you. They really helped me build that confidence. They really helped me to gain a lot of skills. And so when I went for the residency position, I was really ready for it, and obviously got accepted into the program. And I probably wouldn't have been accepted without all of the support that they gave me in that journey. So it was nice to experience.
Isn't it interesting that you say you struggled with the talking piece, given that some of the work you went on to do, and we're going to talk about your podcast in a minute. But I was just interested in the international side of your career, because obviously we've kind of gone from the UK to America, back to the UK, and I know that you went to work in international practice. So how did that all happen?
It was just pure love. It was my husband. I moved for him. We met my first year of residency. He's from the UK but was working out there. So we met when he was on holiday here, visiting his family and friends, and we had mutual friends at the time. So we developed a friendship. I was climbing Kilimanjaro in the first year of my residency. And
as you do.
Yeah, as you do. And he used to come and visit me in Oxford while he was still on holiday. And then sort of the end of the summer, he was like, oh, you know, I'm obviously going back to Dubai. What are we doing? And I was like, well, we could try long distance and see how it works. And obviously it worked out in my favor. We're now married and have two children. But it was a tough journey. And yeah, so every 8 weeks I flew to Dubai to visit him. So that was kind of my initial experience of understanding what it's like in Dubai and Abu Dhabi. And there's so many hospitals, so many clinics, so many pharmacies there. When I made the decision to move, I thought it would be really easy to find an opportunity. I was definitely wrong in that, because it took me 11 months to find a job. It's a very different market to the UK. There are a lot of hospitals, but clinical pharmacy and what a clinical pharmacist is allowed to do legally is very different to the UK. So they're probably, you know, 15 to 20 years behind us, and they are moving forward. They're making big strides, but when I was there back in 2013, which is obviously a decade ago now, when I first went there, there was only sort of four or five clinical pharmacists per hospital. So for me to get a job in a hospital setting became really challenging simply because of the numbers, and new opportunities weren't arising as fast as I wanted or needed them to. I got to the point where I looked into pharmaceutical sales. I looked at completely leaving hospital pharmacy. I looked at going into community pharmacy, but also community pharmacy is more like a shop. It's not exactly the same as what we've got in the UK. You can buy a lot of things over the counter that are prescription only here. And also they do hire staff from countries where they don't have to pay them the same salary as someone from the UK or the US. So that kind of discrimination piece exists. So when I applied for jobs, it was an immediate rejection, simply because they know my expectation for salary would be much higher than someone from the Philippines or India or Syria or Palestine, where they would be paying people less. So, you know, it was really challenging. I ended up sort of at the end of the 10 months saying, like, you know what, I'm going to go home and just locum for a couple of weeks and then come back for a couple of weeks. But I applied for a lot of jobs through recruitment agencies. And eventually one day, as soon as I got home, of course, I got a call from an agency saying, look, there's this role that's come up in Abu Dhabi. And when I looked at the job description, it's a very standard kind of pharmacist role. The role was interesting. It was working in emergency services with ambulances and paramedics. So we were, you know, going to be running like a normal pharmacy, or what it seemed like a normal pharmacy from the job description. I took the interview got offered the job. It was an amazing package in terms of your salary. You know, your housing was included, medical insurance was included, your visas were included, education package, everything. So it fit, it ticked all the boxes, and it was a completely outside of my comfort zone new job. I didn't know what I was going into. Plus, there was no other pharmacy staff, so you were going to be the only pharmacist for the whole organization.
Was that scary? That sounds scary.
Like, when I speak about it, it is completely crazy because you're going so far out your comfort zone. But when I look back at that part of my life, it was the most incredible learning experience that I've had to date. Just imagine walking into the most beautiful building surrounded by, you know, glass walls, views of the ocean and the beach. And I used to see Emirates Palace. Even having an office of my own was a huge luxury after coming out of the NHS. And I came into this job when paramedics and emergency medical technicians, the EMTs, were unable to administer any drugs on an ambulance. So they'd go out to car accidents, or they'd go to someone's house if they've had a heart attack, or maybe they've got hypoglycemia and or they've had a fall, but they have no access to medication to treat that patient. So they were a transport service. So part of the role, which I didn't know when I took the job, was to support the medical director to convince the government to change law for the country to allow medications to be provided within ambulances, train all the paramedics in the standards that are required for the UAE to administer these medications, build a pharmacy so that you can store the medicines, have inventory, do procurement, stock control, find a way to then transport these medications to ambulances all over the country, some of which were like 300-400 kilometers away. We were based in Abu Dhabi, but we were covering everywhere in the UAE except Dubai, because Dubai had their own ambulance service. So some of our ambulance stations were, you know, 5-6 hour drive. So figuring out how are you going to get your stock out to all of those ambulances, and how are you going to replenish that stock, and how often are you going to do it? And then at the same time, we were awarded the Formula One contract. So the ambulance service that I worked for was awarded the emergency services contract for that massive event. So we had to set up a medical center. We had to set up a pharmacy in the medical center. We were hiring international consultants, GPs, physiotherapists for the drivers and for the general public in case of emergencies or obviously car accidents on the track. And all of that responsibility fell on to me. And it sounds huge, but it did transition over the course of sort of 6 months. But it was a massive learning curve because I went from a very early careers, brand new band six pharmacist who was super used to a hospital environment, to suddenly being a woman in a leadership position, which I would have never, ever even dreamed of possibly being in my entire career. There were so many challenges I came across, like importing drugs was so hard. I didn't know where to start, who to, you know, who were the suppliers, how often would we be able to access some of these drugs. And I came across so many problems where even supplies would take like 9 months to arrive to the pharmacy, and they were being imported from other countries because we didn't have local suppliers within the UAE to support some of the medications that we needed. And then storing all that inventory and knowing how much to order in accordance to what we were actually using it for. So that kind of audit trail and data collection, and it was all paper-based. Every time I sent out a bag of specific drugs to an ambulance, there would be a sheet of paper inside showing how many tablets you've got or how many inhalers, expiry dates. And then they would have specific PAR levels. So if one item drops to below PAR, this is your prompt to return that bag to pharmacy, which could take 2 to 3 days, depending on the distance. And you're blind. Once that bag leaves your pharmacy, you're completely blind as to kind of where it is. So the tracking element was really hard for me because you're constantly calling people saying, do the inventory with me over the phone. Which bag numbers have you got? And bags were missing sometimes, and we'd have to go on a mission to try and figure out the steps of that paramedic to find out where they were, what scene they were at, what ambulance they used, what station they last went to.
Is it then that you realised this is why the package was so good? It's then that you thought, now I realise why they've given me this amazing package. And
yeah, so I got, it was just, I mean, there were so many things. And then I identified a lack of education in terms of helping paramedics to understand the laws around pharmacy, because we were hiring professionals from all over the world. So what they were used to in their home country would be very different to the legal requirements of drug storage, usage, administration, prescribing, etc. And because the health authority of Abu Dhabi newly allowed us to use these medications, it was a very strict criteria as to indications, drug dosages, how much you could have access to, which drugs you had access to. That formulary piece was very, they were very particular. And you had to shift somebody's mindset. You had to shift a paramedic's mindset to say, hey, when you're at home, you had access to X, Y, and Z, and you had freedom to do what you wanted on that ambulance. But now that you're here, the rules are different. And so the education piece came in where I thought, we're hiring at an exponential rate. I need to create a pharmacy onboarding program to teach and educate everybody about what, how do they order drugs? What are they allowed to use? What dosages, what indications? How does the pharmacy operations work? How does inventory work? What are the clinical aspects? So I created this cool onboarding program, and this is where my passion for education genuinely started, because I created all this content, which I did for fun and to make my life and my job easier, and also to prevent any issues, because they were so strict about controlled drugs that even if you provided them with an example, like a controlled drug like fentanyl, if it broke, the ampule broke, or it got lost, the pharmacist in charge would go to prison. And that was on my head every day. And I built my own pharmacy in this job. I designed it. I had to put out tenders to different companies who were going to build it. I literally had pen and paper, was drawing out what I wanted, how the workflow would be. It was just awesome. And I got that done. We transformed the paper project, which was inventory and all your stock control was on pieces of A4 paper, to an electronic system that took 9 months, where I was like the subject matter expert who knows and understands all the laws and my systems and processes. And I had a team of IT experts to help me build that program, so I could track everything from expiry dates, who's using what, how often they're using different drugs, when they need resupply, what ambulance stations are running out of certain medications, or they have an expiry date which is short that then can be transferred to another station who use that drug more often, so you have less wastage. From an audit point of view, it was a click of a finger on a computer to get access to information that would take me normally 5 or 6 hours to gather manually over the phone or email. And that was incredible. I could even do purchase orders through the system and generate invoices and things like that, which was amazing. Manage my own inventory in the pharmacy, which was incredible. So that was kind of a massive highlight of my career, to go into that job at such an early stage. And probably one of the most pivotal kind of moments in my life where I understood that there's so much else that pharmacy has to offer outside of what I thought.
I was just thinking, this is so much more than pharmacy, isn't it? This is kind of modernization of, you know, kind of systems that have been in operation for a while. Being out in Abu Dhabi in the Middle East, did you receive any kind of pushback because you were a woman?
I don't think that I did. And when it comes to being a female in pharmacy, I don't know if I'm naive. I genuinely don't feel different to someone else in a boardroom. And I don't know if that's part of my personality, or it's just I'm in my own little zone and I'm just focusing on what I need to do, that I don't take offense when something doesn't necessarily go my way, or I haven't been promoted. I know it's a bit of a strange one, but also in pharmacy, and what I've been surrounded by is mainly females. I mean, pharmacy is a mainly female dominant workspace. As a resident, we had, I think there was 12 or 15 of us. There was only one male in our group. And now when I look at pediatrics and the team that I work with, there's like two males out of 40, you know, pharmacy staff. So the area of expertise is dominated by women. So it's never really come up in my thought processes. And in the UAE, being a female was hard in that job, but not probably because I was a female. It's because I was the only one and no one understood pharmacy.
So thinking about, you know, kind of being a woman in this role, and as you were saying, this is quite a female dominated career, especially for pharmacists, maybe not so much perhaps leadership roles within pharmacy. But have you ever faced any challenges being a woman? But also I wanted to ask you about being a mother, you know, to small children. Were there any challenges that you've encountered being a mum?
I mean, yeah, definitely. I've got multiple examples in that area. Being a mum obviously changed my life significantly. Liliana is my eldest. We were living in the UAE when I had Lily, and I had 6 weeks of maternity leave and went back to work. So I knew in terms of my mindset that I had to spend those first few weeks really working hard on my physical and mental recovery and emotional recovery from the whole birthing experience. And I didn't know what that was going to look like for me. I didn't know if I would have a C-section or have a natural birth at that time. So obviously I didn't know how long the recovery would take. And it's different for every woman, right? You just don't know what you're going to be faced with until you're faced with it. And then obviously understanding what it's like to be a parent was really, really hard. So I spent a couple of weeks, I gave birth here in the UK. And then after a couple of weeks of spending time with my mum, I moved back to Abu Dhabi, got Liliana set up at a nursery where she went full time from the age of 6 weeks, which was is quite a difficult transition. But I think I just had to get on with it. This is what I have to do. This is what I'm faced with. And there was no, I don't want to do it, or this is unfair, or I feel bad that I'm leaving my child with someone else in terms of childcare. I crack on. And I did night shifts. I did weekends. I was pumping on the job and then delivering milk on my lunch breaks to the nursery and all sorts of things like that, which I just thought, now I know, is just like, it's a bit wild. And out there, it's a lot on top of doing a full-time job. And full-time jobs there are 48 hours a week, as opposed to the NHS 37 and a half hours a week. So it's basically 6 days a week. However, my quality of life, my energy, my happiness, my ability to thrive was way better in that moment at that time compared to where I'm at now, which is just insane. And a lot of that comes down to the culture and the lifestyle. I didn't appreciate it until I returned home and realized how hard life is in the UK in comparison to living abroad. But working in the NHS, you do have a lot of benefits when it comes to being a parent. I mean, a one-year maternity leave, which I was expecting to get with my son, but I did come back to work early due to the financial reasons post-COVID. And interest rates and all of that stress that has kind of come into my life now. You know, you do get that luxury of having the time off to recover and enjoy spending time with your child. So I had 5 months with Kai the second time around, which I loved and I enjoyed immensely in comparison to the 6 weeks. And I'm very grateful for that time. But what was hard for me here is that when you're working in a patient-facing role, it's very difficult to get flexibility as a parent. And this is the one thing that has helped me to transition to where I am now, to having a more flexible life as a parent and choosing the hours that I work and where I work as well, because as a parent, especially of young children, you just never know when you're going to get that phone call that your kid's got fever at nursery and needs to be picked up. And when you're in a patient-facing role, whether it's community pharmacy or in a hospital, I think it's really challenging to get the work-life balance piece, because you feel very committed to the patients that you have and the community that you're working with, and the role that you've got. If you're a dedicated employee, that's really kind of like high on your list of things that you want and to achieve on a day-to-day basis. But at the same time, you value your home life just as much, if not more. But to get that balance is genuinely really hard. And when you don't have as much flexibility in your workspace, it does impact the mental health and your ability to be the best version of yourself as a parent.
Now, I want to talk to you about how you did create a bit of flexibility into your career. But just before we move on to almost like the second part of your career, what's the one piece of advice that you wish someone had given you at the beginning of your career, when you were still working in hospital and out in Abu Dhabi? Is there anything that you wish somebody had advised you on that side of your career?
I wish someone had told me to focus more on life skill. And what I mean by life skill is understanding more about myself and my values, learning more about resilience and stress management, looking at things like time management and organizational skills. Now, these are all things that you learn in a job and all things that you will learn from experience as a human. But if I had had more strategy, more tips and tricks and things that I knew, tools that I could utilize, that I wasn't just learning out of reactivity because something had happened, it was an experience that was maybe negative or challenging, and I'm like, okay, I faced an obstacle, here's how you fix it. And that's a great, great way of learning. I love learning like that because that's the best way to grow. But at the same time, if I had a foundation of life skill that I truly understood and could utilize, I would feel way less stressed in the day-to-day job, because working in the NHS is hard. Working for the NHS, you have to have resilience. You have to work under pressure. You have to be okay with lack of resource. You have to be okay with dropping everything to support your team. And in a very time-pressured environment, usually, and on a day-to-day basis, as well as achieving all the targets that you're expected to achieve in your day-to-day job as well. And no one tells you about that when you are in university. No one mentioned any of that to me when I was in university. And you go into the job and you suddenly are faced with this like fireball and you don't know how to necessarily like put it out. It's just there and you just have to deal with it, and you become a very reactive human. And you have to work really hard to take a few steps forward to prevent some of those issues from happening. And I talk about this a lot with MPharm students and when I'm teaching at King's College London. And something now that I'm genuinely passionate about is understanding more about what you want out of life. What, you know, what are your passions? What do you enjoy? What are you good at? What are you not so good at that you need to focus on? Yeah, so I feel like, you know, I'm raising that awareness to students. That, you know, think about these things. They're really important for you to learn about, so that when you walk into an NHS organization as an employee, you've got those tools. So you don't go to the kind of phase of burnout and stress and leaving the pharmacy career that you've worked so hard for the wrong reasons. Because I'm seeing that a lot as a professional. I'm seeing a lot of young people coming through pharmacy, finishing their degree, and within 2 to 3 years, they quit. And they're of the generation that just say, like, see ya, I'm going to do something else. So I think we have to be honest and open with the younger generation to say that, hey, this is a reality that we're facing, but here are the tools and the strategies to prevent you from going into burnout and when you step into employment, because that transition from student life to employment is really hard for the younger generation. They are struggling with it.
I think as the natural evolution of generations go through, we should be imparting that knowledge to them because nobody imparted it to us. You know, so it's just the natural progression of education. And I'm sure your students are, you know, super grateful that they've got somebody like you to talk to about that. It sounds like, you know, kind of on the job and off the job, you're talking to people about the realities of working as a woman, but you're just working as a pharmacist as well. Now, I want to ask you about your podcast, and you mentioned it just there. And could you just set the scene for us about how this actually, how you know, at what point in your career were you when you decided to do this? You know, how and why did you come up with the idea to do this? Because I don't think many people would have had the confidence to say, you know what the world needs? It's more me. You know, it's let's just set up something where I'm in charge of the debate. So just talk me through how it all happened.
It's my students, my MPharm students. They're my motivation. So if any of them are listening in right now, you are the reason why this podcast exists. Back in 2018, I was teaching first year students a lot when I first joined King's College London as an educator. And in my lecturing role, I would be teaching very basic, you know, the legal aspects of pharmacy. You know, what is the BNF? You know, really simple lectures that I was kind of covering. And as I taught more students and got to know them, I started really unraveling how little that they know about the pharmacy profession and how their awareness of what pharmacy has to offer is really narrow. They know that there's community pharmacy and majority of students will go into community pharmacy. However, their perception of community pharmacy is not so great. They believe that the hospital role is superior because you are getting to use a lot more of your clinical skills. You get to become a specialist pharmacist. You have this pathway that you can go down. And then a really tiny proportion of students will be lucky enough to get into industry. And that's kind of all that they sort of understood. And I wanted to help them understand that there's so much more that pharmacy has to offer in terms of different types of roles and the different types of skills that you need within each role. And I wanted to find a way to inspire them in an easy format, which wasn't turning up to a lecture, and in a format which they like, which is anything to do with an app or a phone or an iPad. And podcasts just came to my mind immediately. I listen to them a lot. I spend a lot of time listening to podcasts personally. And I thought just on the train one day, I was like, what if I was to help them to understand more about the pharmacy profession by talking to other pharmacists in different sectors and having conversations with people. And then when they're commuting into university every day, they've got me in their headphones and the guest that I talk to who is unraveling their journey. How did they get different jobs? Why did they get different jobs? What inspired them? What was their role model during this time? Or what challenges have they faced personally and professionally that have made them who they are? If you want to go from community to hospital, how has someone done it? It's like a how-to step-by-step guide. Advice on CVs, on interviews, on applications, and anything kind of career-related.
So it's quite a practical podcast, really. It's not just talking for the sake of talking, if you see what I mean, which quite a lot of podcasts can be or can, you know, kind of become. So it sounds like it's quite a, you know, a tool for younger pharmacists to use.
Absolutely. And it also showcases our profession. We do not do this enough. We are not showcasing what pharmacy or pharmacists or technicians are doing in the realm of pharmacy. And it's just a passion project. I've had emails from people where they've listened to episodes and they've had the courage to change jobs after 20 years of doing something. That is amazing to receive messages like that. And that's what lights me up. At the moment, I'm working on utilizing a chatbot. So it's using AI that will integrate into my website. So somebody could go onto the website, ask any question, and it will find all of the episodes which have that topic of conversation within it. So it's a really good filtering process. You know, I'm trying to think of the people who are watching or listening or tuning in. Like, what do they need to make their journey to listening to this podcast easier? how can they educate themselves faster?
This seems like a kind of a running theme through your career. You want to do something, but you're not quite sure how. So you just learn how to do it. You know, you just say, well, I'm not going to let it stop me that I don't know how to do this. I'm just going to work out how to do it. So it seems a determination to succeed seems to be the running theme through your career so far.
Yeah, I am quite determined to do something. When I want to do something, I'm quite determined. And being now, as I call myself, an entrepreneur is a whole new experience that I never knew I had the skill set for. And I never knew that pharmacy would give me that skill set. Pharmacy has given me a lot of the skill set to do an entrepreneurial role and have an entrepreneurial mindset and understand how to grow on an organic, in an organic way, rather than trying to, you know, just go all in when you don't really have time for it. It does take a lot of baby steps. It does take a lot of trial and error. It does take a lot of research, figuring out things that you know nothing about. I mean, marketing, I know nothing about marketing, but I'm slowly starting to figure things out. And there are so many experienced humans on the web who have free content, free webinars, free podcasts, free books on Audible, whatever it is, where you can learn that content so quickly. Instagram itself has been an amazing learning platform for me. So I literally follow people who will only help me on my journey as a podcaster. I'm trying to follow people that will help me on the journey in entrepreneurship and business, because when you are scrolling on that feed and you are aimlessly scrolling at content and what people are doing, yeah, you can obviously spend hours doing that. So I'm trying to stop myself from being that person and utilizing it as a form of education so I can see what's happening. People that I follow on there, or people who are setting up businesses, other entrepreneurs who are in pharmacy as well, that I follow them to see how they're kind of transitioning and making connections with them as well. Because once you build a little mini community of people who are like-minded, you obviously share ideas with each other and support each other on the journey, which has been nice.
Now, taking this kind of this theme of enabling, obviously we're doing this this series of podcasts for International Women's Day in March, and also it's Women's History Month. So these podcasts, we're talking to inspiring women that we think we can learn from. And actually the theme for this International Women's Day is Inspire Inclusion. And I was just wondering, which women have you been inspired by? They could be women in pharmacy, they could be women in other parts of your life. But is there anybody that really stands out for you?
In pharmacy, I've been really inspired by Catherine Duggan, who is the CEO of FIP. And yeah, the International Pharmaceutical Federation. And I interviewed her in my first sort of 10 episodes, and I was so scared to email her. I was like, there's no way that somebody with this type of, you know, leadership and kind of an executive level pharmacist would have the time to be interviewed by me on this little podcast that I've just started a few episodes ago and I don't know anything about. And she said yes. And even something as small as that has been quite pivotal for me, because when you think about your comfort zone and as a pharmacist, you kind of, you know you're quite risk averse, and going out of your comfort zone can be quite hard for people. And we've kind of continued a friendship since then. I email her every few months, let her know what I'm doing, what the podcast is getting up to. And I've had a series with FIP in terms of pharmacists who work for the organization and showcasing their journeys on an international and global scale, because I think now my audience is global. It's really useful to have pharmacists from all over the world coming onto the podcast. Of course, I love face-to-face, and people come to my home and record in this office that I'm in now, you know, spending time with you. But on an international scale, I want to learn more about pharmacy. And FIP as an organization is incredible. They have so much to offer. And for me, just thinking, if you're a CEO of an organization that is that huge, it just feels like a massive responsibility. And for me, she's a role model, because right now I'm like a one-man band. You know, I'm the only person who's technically employed by Pharmacist Diaries podcast, but I'm at the point where I need to build a team. And I don't necessarily know how to do that as an entrepreneur, or who is the first hire I'm going to make, what's the best. It's a business move. And this is a learning journey. While she's in a space where she's looking after hundreds of staff, she's responsible for the growth and development of that organization. And for me, that is so inspiring. She's in a space which is like 10,000 steps ahead of where I am now. And I really get excited that, you know, I still feel like a baby pharmacist sometimes. And there are so many more.
You don't get imposter syndrome, do you?
Well, I had my first case of imposter syndrome last week. I've never had it before. It was tough. So as part of the podcast and understanding more about this brand and what I want to offer to the world, obviously I want the brand to grow. I don't just want it to be the podcast and conversations. I want to serve the community. And I've been trying to figure out what my community need. And as part of that, I've been understanding that a lot of people in pharmacy, whether it's students or pharmacists, are really struggling with understanding where their passion lies inside the kind of pharmacy career space. Maybe they don't know which avenue to go down, or they're in a role where they might be a bit bored, or they're not that happy, and they don't know how to navigate the next steps, or understanding why they don't like what they're doing at the moment and what they could be doing instead that would bring them joy and happiness and fulfillment and reward. And obviously for me, developing this podcast and this brand has helped me to understand a whole new level of joy. And I'm discovering so much about myself on this journey, and people are also saying to me that, hey, I don't know where I fit in within pharmacy, or I have an element of burnout or boredom, or I'm not sure where I'm at. And students also, they don't know where to go. They're so far in the other end where they're confused. And I have figured out personally in my own journey and my own story, utilizing questions and reflection and understanding my values and my passions and what I'm good at, what I'm not good at, what I could work on. And then the other piece of it is not only just the passion piece, but also people are really struggling with time management. And I feel like as a mother of two children working full time, I'm in a hospital job plus a university job plus managing this podcast. I do have good time management skills, and I'm good at myself, and why don't I utilize that skill to teach other people how to do it? So my idea for the Pharmacist Diaries brand was to develop a course which helps people to understand more about themselves, kind of get that bigger picture as to what are your passions within pharmacy. And that course is being built at the moment. And I put myself out there on social media, and I basically did a pre-sale. I said, look guys, this is what I want to create. I'm going to give 10 people 50% off of my course in exchange for a bit of feedback as I'm building it, so that you can be a part of the journey with me as a community, but you can also really help me because you are like my ideal customer. So I know what your requirements are, and I can build a course that's literally perfect for you. Myself out there. I haven't done this type of sort of salesmanship before and really selling myself. You know, the podcast sells itself. I don't have to do that much, but I really had to put myself out there. And then, like in the first few days, there were no sales.
Oh no. So this is when the imposter syndrome really kicks in.
Yeah. And people were messaging me saying, oh, you must be sold out by now. You must be sold out. And I'm like, no, literally no one has bought from me. So I fell apart and I was like, oh my God, I know nothing about what I'm doing. You know, it was so hard. Yeah, it was really hard. So of course I was mortified, and I felt like it was an experience with regards to imposter syndrome, but I have completely shifted my mindset. My idea, I think, is fabulous. Like, I'm really happy with the idea that I've got. I definitely think there's a market for it. I definitely think there are a lot of people who could find value from it, but I think I need to get to know my audience more in order to understand what it takes to make a pharmacist hit a sale button. I don't know what that is yet. I've, you know, in pharmacy, we don't tend to sell, I guess. We do to our patients, don't we? We're selling and empowering them in terms of patient education, but it's not the same as when you're doing it for yourself. So this whole like shift in mindset is going to take me some time. And again, it's an obstacle that I'm facing, but I'm going to overcome it and I'm going to make it a success. Like I feel that there's a lot of value in manifesting good things, because when you manifest good things, they do come, they become a reality. I genuinely believe that.
Well, it sounds like from just talking to you for the last hour that your manifesting is also doing and kind of, you know, creating, and this determination to move forward. Just one last question until we reach the end of our time today. But that was really about what you are most excited about for the future of women in pharmacy. I know we've been talking about, you know, your career path to date and having a portfolio career and the flexibility that you've sought out. You know, you've kind of carved that path for yourself. But what are you more kind of, you know, excited about for other women in pharmacy in the future?
I think it's exciting that there's a lot more women in leadership roles. And though pharmacy is very dominated by females in general, if you look at the leadership ladder, there are a lot of males in leadership positions. And I'm hoping that this will obviously change for women in the future. And it is changing, 100% is already changing. But it would be amazing to see a lot more females in amazing leadership positions wherever you're working, and being able to have that sort of ownership and being assertive and being able to negotiate and being able to do things for your team that you wouldn't necessarily have previously been able to do.
Yeah, just having the kind of the majority of the industry be represented within leadership. So I think it's something really, really exciting for the future. And thank you for ending us on that, you know, bright note for the future. That is all we've got time for today. Thank you so much for talking to me. Your career has been fascinating, and I'm sure it will continue to be fascinating as well. And I can't wait to see what you do next and where the Pharmacist Diaries takes you as well. I'm sure it'll go from strength to strength. So thank you so much for your time today.
Absolutely. No, it was a pleasure talking to you, and it's good. I really like the idea of having a really honest conversation, the good and the bad. There are lots of amazing things that have happened in my career, but there's also been quite a few obstacles and challenges that I've had to face personally. But it's good to know that I've come out on the other side.
Yes, we go forward with honesty and realism and hope as well. So thank you so much. Thank you. A huge thank you to Anisha for joining us on that episode and sharing her perspective on having a portfolio career as a pharmacist. You can discover more about Anisha Patel's unconventional journey on her website, which is www.pharmacistdiaries.com. You can connect with her and the podcast on social media platforms for additional content, behind-the-scenes insights, and updates on compelling episodes. For more news and updates on C&D's Women in Pharmacy group, please check out the C&D community via our website, chemistanddruggist.co.uk. Thank you for listening.